Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, in the United States, a city known for racial tensions and violence welcomed home the national men's college basketball champions on Tuesday. Charlottesville, Virginia, is the home of the University of Virginia. The UVA men's basketball team, the Cavaliers, defeated Texas Tech for the national championship Monday night. The game was played in Minnesota. Less than 24 hours later, college students and other people were celebrating in the streets of Charlottesville. Supporters gathered outside the school's basketball stadium to give the team a hero's welcome. Students broke into cheers as they waited for the players. Some retold stories of the Cavaliers' successful season, which included several last-minute victories. The crowd cheered when the team finally arrived with the championship trophy. Many people were so happy, they cried. UVA men's basketball coach Tony Bennett said he was pleased to see the victory bring so much happiness in light of all this community's been through. He added, "There's an amazing story that has been written from this, and I think it's going to encourage a lot of people." The cheering was a marked change from nearly 2 years ago, when a protest organized by white nationalists led to violence in Charlottesville. A few years earlier, a national magazine claimed a violent rape had taken place at the university. The story was later found to be untrue. "We were due for some good coverage for a change," said Matilda Foster, as she waited for the basketball team to arrive on Tuesday. She said, "The Cavaliers' success has united the city and surrounding area." David Toscano once served as Charlottesville's mayor. He said, "The team has helped unite the community in ways few other things can. This is a really big event for this city," he said.
United States officials are worried about China's expansion of its Belt and Road Initiative to Latin America. The Belt and Road program is helping to pay for ports and trade-related infrastructure in Central and South American countries. That is just a little too close to the U.S. border, the officials think. China is not new in Latin America, but now it is working with nations such as Panama, a country the United States invaded just as recently as 1989. Panama is home to the Panama Canal, which connects the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. So it is very important strategically. While U.S. officials express concern about China's moves into Latin America, Chinese officials are working to make friends with Panamanian politicians and media. The Chinese ambassador to Panama is a Spanish-speaking expert on Latin America. On television and messages published on Twitter, he has noted the economic benefits of the project. "We see a big opportunity to connect Asia and America to Panama," noted Panamanian President Juan Carlos Varela. He spoke during a visit to Hong Kong this week. China's government said he planned to attend a Belt and Road meeting in Beijing with other foreign leaders. Belt and Road is Chinese President Xi Jinping's major program for foreign countries. The Chinese plan to build railways, ports, power plants, and other projects in more than 20 countries around the world. The United States, Japan, Russia, India, and other governments worry that China is gaining too much economic and strategic power. "A strong U.S. reaction is coming," said Matt Furchen. He is an expert on China-Latin America relations and works at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing. Panama's leaders see China as a partner for trade and investment, but they want to avoid conflict with the U.S. government. Varela has said Panama's relationship with China will not affect relations with our strategic partner. For the Belt and Road Initiative, China loans money to countries to pay for development projects. Currently, Venezuela owes $62 billion. Brazil owes $42 billion. Argentina and Ecuador each owe over $16 billion. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador has said he is considering joining Belt and Road. U.S. officials say governments should be careful. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo visited Panama in October and met with Varela. He said Panama should keep its eyes wide open about Chinese investments. "We are all concerned about China and by the way that China is entering those countries," Pompeo said in December. He was speaking at a meeting of the Group of 20 Major Economies in Argentina. So far, the Panamanian government has been paying for projects awarded to Chinese businesses. Panama has yet to receive Chinese loans. President Donald Trump's America First policies are not helping the United States in Latin America, said businessman Roberto Eisenman. "They are leaving a vacuum of leadership that obviously the Chinese are trying to fill," said Eisenman. Trump has yet to name an ambassador to Panama. I'm Susan Shand.
An international team of astronomers announced Wednesday it had successfully captured the first ever image of a black hole. The image was released during a press event at the National Science Foundation in Washington, D.C. press events were also held in several other world cities. The picture shows the black hole having a dark center, encircled by a bright orange and yellow ring spreading outward. The image is very similar to numerous artists' drawings through the years of what scientists believed a black hole looked like. Black holes are areas in space where gravity is so strong that nothing, not even light, can escape them. They are believed to be formed by collapsed stars. The presence of black holes affects the surrounding environment in extreme ways. Black holes are not easy to capture on camera because they are surrounded by thick dust material and extremely hot gases. But scientists say they were able to produce the new image from data collected from a series of radio telescopes around the world. The telescopes are part of the International Event Horizon Telescope, or EHT, project. Harvard University scientist Shepard Doleman leads the EHT project. He announced the image discovery.
We are delighted to be able to report to you today that we have seen what we thought was unseeable. We have seen and taken a picture of a black hole. Here it is.
Doleman explained that the image resulted from a combined effort involving all eight of the EHT radio telescopes working at the same time. Over several days in April 2017, each piece of equipment centered on a galaxy 55 million light years away from Earth. The galaxy is called Messier 87, or M87. At the center of the galaxy is a supermassive black hole. The new image shows this black hole. It has a mass 6.5 billion times greater than Earth's sun. Researchers said in a statement that the EHT project created an Earth-sized virtual telescope to capture the highest possible image quality. The effort involved years of international cooperation by hundreds of researchers seeking to understand the most extreme objects in the universe. Dimitrios Saltis is an EHT project scientist from the University of Arizona in Tucson. He said the new picture provides strong evidence to support Albert Einstein's theories relating to the laws of gravity. The size and shape of the shadow matches the precise predictions of Einstein's general theory of relativity, increasing our confidence in this century-old theory, Saltis said. 3 years ago, scientists used highly sensitive observing equipment to pick up the sound of two smaller black holes coming together to create a gravitational wave. That discovery also confirmed Einstein's theory. Shepard Doleman said the new image provides the first visual evidence to confirm that theory. It also helps to unlock the mystery of black holes. He added that he felt very satisfied that the image did not contain any big surprises.
You could have seen something that was unexpected, but we didn't see something that was unexpected. We saw something so true. We saw something that really had a ring to it, if you can use that term or phrase.
Even though the data was first gathered in 2017, it required a huge effort to produce the image released on Wednesday. The operation involved an international team of scientists using supercomputers to process massive amounts of data. Jessica Dempsey is deputy director of the East Asian Observatory in Hawaii and a co-discoverer in the project. "We've been hunting this for a long time," she said of the new black hole image. "We've been getting closer and closer with better technology," she added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The United States did not play a very large part in world events during the 1800s. At the beginning of the 1900s, however, it expanded its interests throughout the world. America's president at that time strongly supported the expansion. He was Theodore Roosevelt, a distantly related cousin of the future president, Franklin Roosevelt. Shirley Griffith and Frank Oliver complete the story of America's 26th president, who was also known as Teddy.
Theodore Roosevelt became president in 1901, after the assassination of President William McKinley. He completed the last 3 years of McKinley's term. Then he was elected in his own right. Those 4 years are spoken of as Roosevelt's second term. It was during this second term that Roosevelt gained his most important foreign policy success. He negotiated an end to a war between Russia and Japan. Later, he was asked to settle another international dispute. At issue was Morocco.
In 1904, France and Britain signed an agreement on North Africa. The agreement gave Britain control over Egypt. It gave France responsibility for security and reforms in Morocco. Germany opposed the agreement. It felt threatened by any French-British alliance, and it feared France would block German trade ties with Morocco. Germany demanded an open-door policy that would permit all countries to trade freely in Morocco. It proposed an international conference to settle the dispute. France and Britain rejected the idea. The ruler of Germany, Kaiser Wilhelm II, warned that the dispute could lead to war. The Kaiser asked Theodore Roosevelt to intervene.
President Roosevelt agreed to help. Some American lawmakers criticized him. They said it was an American tradition not to get involved in European disputes. But Roosevelt believed peace was more important than tradition. He set up the conference in the Spanish seaport of Algeciras. 12 European nations and the United States attended. The conference agreed to an open-door trade policy in Morocco. It organized an international bank to control Morocco's finances. And it gave France and Spain almost complete control over police forces in Morocco's port cities.
Theodore Roosevelt had become a powerful world leader. At home, however, he was losing power. One reason was an economic depression. Business leaders blamed it on Roosevelt. They said it was the result of his efforts to gain government control over industry. The other reason was one he had created himself. At that time, there was no law limiting a president's term in office. But America's first president, George Washington, had established a tradition of only two terms. When Theodore Roosevelt won the election of 1904, he announced he would not be a candidate in 1908. He had completed the term of President McKinley. He would serve a full term of his own. That was enough. Later he said, "I would be willing to cut off my hand if I could call back that statement."
During his last year in office, Roosevelt was a lame duck president. Everyone knew he would not be back. There was little political reason to support him. He faced increased opposition from Congress and from his own Republican Party. His final message to Congress was extremely bitter. President Roosevelt accused Congress and the court system of working only to help rich Americans. He called for a tax on earnings. He called for legislation to give workers a greater share of the nation's wealth. The House of Representatives voted to reject the message. It said Roosevelt had failed to show respect for the legislative branch of government.
Roosevelt refused to give up hope for the policies he believed America needed. He would not be able to fight for these policies himself, but he could find a presidential candidate who would. He was sure the people would vote for his choice. He decided on his close friend, Secretary of War William Howard Taft. Taft had spent most of his life in government service. He had been a judge in both a state court and a federal court. He had been a lawyer in the Justice Department. And he had been governor of the Philippines.
There was one problem, however. Taft did not want to be president. He really wanted to be Chief Justice of the United States. But there were no immediate openings on the Supreme Court. Also, his wife, his brothers, and his good friend, Theodore Roosevelt, urged him to run. So Taft agreed to be a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination in 1908. When he won the nomination, Taft said, "Mr. Roosevelt led the way to reform. My job, if elected, will be to complete and perfect his programs." The Democratic Party nominated William Jennings Bryan. Bryan had been a candidate two times before without success.
The presidential campaign was not especially exciting. William Howard Taft did not like being on the campaign trail. He was a big, heavy man. He did not like to travel. Roosevelt urged him to campaign with more energy. "Hit hard, old man," Roosevelt said. Make the people see the truth. Let them know that, for all your gentleness and kindliness, there never existed a man who was a better fighter when the need arose. Roosevelt's advice and strong support helped Taft win a big victory on Election Day.
A few weeks after Taft was sworn in as president, Roosevelt left on a year-long trip overseas. He spent most of the time hunting wild animals in Africa. President Taft wrote a warm goodbye letter to his friend. He promised to do his best as president. But he admitted he could not lead as Roosevelt had done. In fact, Taft said, he was still surprised when anyone called him Mr. President. Each time it happened, he turned around to see if Roosevelt was there.
There was no question that Taft's way of leading was much different from Roosevelt's. Taft believed a president should not interfere too deeply in the actions of Congress. He also believed a president should not claim special powers or rights. He believed in the supreme power of the law, even if the law did not work very well. The progressives who had supported Roosevelt did not support Taft. They said he was too friendly with conservatives. They said he had surrendered to special interest groups. Taft, for his part, did not like progressives. He thought they were too emotional and extreme.
Yet Taft worked hard to put into law many parts of Roosevelt's progressive programs. He was successful in several areas. During his administration, for example, a separate Department of Labor was established. Two constitutional amendments won congressional approval and were sent to the states for ratification. One amendment provided for a federal tax on earnings. The other provided for direct popular election of senators. Taft also worked even harder than Roosevelt to break up companies or trusts that blocked economic competition.
At the same time, Taft failed in several areas. He signed legislation that lowered import taxes. Neither businessmen nor progressive Republicans liked it. He negotiated a free trade agreement with Canada. The Canadian Parliament rejected it. He believed in protecting America's wilderness areas, yet he did not believe existing laws gave him the right to close public lands to private development. So he was seen as an enemy of conservation. These struggles and failures made Taft's 4 years as president the unhappiest of his life.
The final blow came in an effort to reduce the powers of the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The Speaker was a conservative Republican. Progressive Republicans opposed him. The issue split the party. Theodore Roosevelt, far from home, read about the trouble. He had promised to stay out of politics. But each of the opposing groups in his party had asked for his support.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.